works very hard on fitness and the running game.
That's what kind of led me to want this dream of being a racing driver.
There's no point in talking about anything except standards of excellence.
We will deal with the Tailteann Cup if we're in it, and we'll certainly give it every bit of respect.
There's no feeling that beats playing for Ireland. Up the Elevelly.
My God, I'm going to do everything that is possible to bring us there.
This is SportsBeat Extra on Beat.
I'm Adrian and welcome back to this week's SportsBeat Extra. Coming up on today's show, I'll be joined by Rachel Sawyer and Cleanan Ishe of Carlo LGFA after they received All-Stars and were named in the All-Ireland Junior Team of the Championship. But first, I caught up with Waterford FC's Head of Community Development, Colin Power, after it was confirmed the club's autism-friendly inclusion programme was shortlisted in the final four clubs competing for the EFDN More Than Football Award.
SportsBeat Extra. Beat 102-103.
Really, well, I'm delighted to be joined by Waterford FC Head of Community Development, Colin Power, following obviously the shortlisting of the European Football Development Network's More Than Football Award. Firstly, it's a mouthful of a name, isn't it, for an award?
It is, yeah. It's I suppose they need to get the More Than Football element in because it's separate from what would happen on the pitch.
Yeah.
But it is a mouthful.
Yeah. But I mean, it's actually such a massive achievement, I suppose, to be nominated in those final four shortlists, obviously for the Autism Friendly Inclusion Programme that you're running down in Waterford FC. What can you tell us a little bit about that?
I suppose there's three components to it. The first one, and the one going the longest, the first one we did is, we call it the Autism Friendly Matchday Experience. So Tony O'Neill would have approached me initially back in April last year, not long after I was appointed into the role. And from the conversation, one thing stuck out in my head. He said to me he wanted to bring kids to the football that can't go to the football. And that was kind of alien, I suppose, to me, someone who's involved in football all their lives in different roles. But, and, you know, when we spoke about it, there was lots of reasons that the kids couldn't come. Turnstiles was one, queuing was another, noise, lots of different aspects. So from that conversation, we met different groups, different parents, kids, to see how we could change things there and work around the challenges, I suppose, to get them into the RSC to watch Waterford FC play.
Yeah, and what were the sort of things that you ended up developing as a result of that to kind of make that match day experience more smoother for parents and children?
So, what we have developed now, I think, is it's up to a standard that the kids deserve and the families deserve, but, you know, it took a bit of time to get there, so we had to ask families and kids to come when we knew it wasn't right, but then they would tell us about the issues. So there was lots of them. One of them would have been the queuing, as I've mentioned. Mm. That was an issue, going through a turnstile. That was a big issue. So we have a system in place now that the kids or their parents will collect the tickets in the club shop a day or two prior to the match. They have a lanyard within that pack that we give them. They meet the community ambassadors at the gate then, and they have purple bibs on. The kids have the lanyard, so they know who they are. Everyone is easy identifiable. They bring them through the main gate, so there's no queuing whatsoever. There's no turnstiles. It's a separate entrance. It's really the car entrance, I suppose. But we bring them in that gate. The community ambassador that's appointed to the family will stay with them for the night. So they bring them over to the new stand in Block F, front two rows there they have. And whatever they need then during the night, whether it's to go to the quiet room, you know, to get some food, the community ambassador is on hand whenever needed or if needed at all, but they're there all the time. And I suppose the second aspect that came about from the Friday nights in the RSC was that we were losing a lot of kids. I think the hardest thing we thought would be getting them in there initially, just with all the different challenges, but having got them in there, we were losing. So we have an average of seven families a night coming in, so that's seven kids. And we were kind of losing them on 40 minutes. Half time was a particular issue for us. And, you know, there was five of the families gone by 60 minutes, really. So, you know, again, I spoke to the families, what could we do about it? And kept reoccurring about a sensory room. So luckily enough, the club, when I spoke to them, they were prepared to give us a room there and we fitted it out there. And we call it the quiet room. So now if a kid needs a bit of quiet time for whatever reason, one of the community ambassadors will bring him and his parents or guardians back to it. I don't encourage them to be in there for long periods of time. You know, the goal here is to get them down to watch the matches with the rest of the supporters. So you don't want them stuck in a quiet room. So we kind of say around 10 minutes just to get them, you know, get that quiet time they need. And then they go back to the seats and watch the rest of the game with the rest of the supporters. And that has worked really well. Now, we might lose one kid a night before the 90 minutes. But in general, compared to where you were losing a lot of them, now they're all very comfortable there. You know, everyone can see them where they're sitting. Yeah. Very comfortable there and relaxed. And most of them now, the majority of the time, spend the whole time down there.
Mm-hmm. And is it just the nights at the RSC that are catered around with this project, or are there other elements to it as well?
No, there's other, and again, it was from talking to the parents. You know, you get to know them when you're meeting them in the week, and I suppose when they're, you know, we would have sat down quite a bit before we got it to a level we were comfortable with. And, you know, you get to know people then, and they would have expressed that, you know, there wasn't that much to do from a sporting activity for the kids, for the families. And again, we looked at, is there anything we can do in, you know, in that regard, that could we put something on? And we established what we call now football friends from the Autism Match Day experience. And that is an hour of football for them down in Osier Park. So the Waterford District Junior League give us Osier Park for between May and October. And then from October to April, we go to the Butler Community Centre in Johns Park. And those two facilities give us for not free of charge. And it's aimed at kids from 5 to 16 on the autism spectrum. And they come down and, you know, there's no expectation on the kids. It's as much a social occasion as it is a football occasion. And that's been running now for about 14 months. And we have an average of 15 kids there every single week. And we run that for 50 weeks of the year. Christmas and the first Tuesday of the new year, we take a break, but it runs throughout the year otherwise.
Yeah. It sounds like obviously the club's put a lot of effort into developing this programme, but on top of that, it's also a real community effort as well, isn't it?
Look, I think that's the beauty of this, because Waterford FC are in the final four. The other three that we're up against, and a lot of the ones that were in the long lists, would be set up as separate entities. So although they're attached to the club, so for instance, Salford City, they're in it, and it's Class of 92 Foundation is what they're called, and that's a separate, it's a charity with, you know, lots of employees, with lots of access to funding because they're a charity. You know, the EFL give them funding, the National Lottery, the government of the UK. The only funding we get really is for my role from the club and from Healthy Ireland. So when you compare, I suppose, the budgets, if you like, and the access to funding, I think we punch way above our weights, and that's down to the volunteers that help, you know, nothing else, and obviously the support from the club, and that's from, you know, my colleagues in the office, but also, you know, Keith and, you know, the lads out there and all the players are all, you know, we've been down in the RSC. Darren and the lads there gave us access to play on the main pitch there one day, and, you know, we had, you know, management down with players down, and, you know, that was fantastic for the kids. So it's, you're right, it's a real community effort, this, and, you know, the club have a huge involvement in it, but we couldn't do it without the volunteers. And, you know, particularly on a Friday night, they're down there in all weathers, and they're not down there to watch the football, they're down there solely to make sure the kids, you know, are comfortable and happy down there. And and these are kids that wouldn't be in the RSC under normal circumstances, you know, so it's a real community effort.
And you mentioned earlier on there the sort of the development of getting RSCs to that space where kids were able to stay for the full 90 minutes and enjoy the game. I presumably that development of all of that work is still ongoing, even to make it even better for them. What's sort of the future looking like for this sort of project?
I think, to be fair, at the moment I think it's at a level that we're very happy with. There's an awful lot of work has gone into it, and, you know, there was a time, I suppose, last year where I had the lads in the RSC tormented. There seemed to be something every week I wanted them to change or fix or move or whatever. And because of all that help, I think, like, it's at a fairly serious level. We've had, as I am down there, their chief executive, who are the Autism Charity of Ireland, and, you know, they thought it was amazing. We've had the FAI down to look at it. You know, you can see the kids there now. They're very happy and very comfortable. But But yeah, if there's changes, and you know, we try and add value to it as well. So the clubs supply all the tickets, you know, there's no charge for this, and have done since day one. And we also try and add value by giving them a little welcome pack, which will be a copy of the Blue Army, some sweet treats, and then Supermax give us, you know, a scrapbook or a colouring book or a toy as well every week for the kids that are coming. So it's a real community initiative, you know.
Yeah. You mentioned the FAI coming down. Is there, have they been in contact with you in any way about trying to expand this project outside to other League of Ireland clubs, or even just on when it comes to the national team games?
Well, absolutely. I'm not familiar if they do something in the Aviva. Outside of, I suppose, League of Ireland clubs, some of them have come to me regarding it, because, you know, there would be six FSR officers funded by Healthy Ireland through the FAI, and they would have. And I think what makes, again, unique in Waterford, and you touched on it, it's the volunteers we have here. They're not easy come by, people that will give up their Friday nights, give up their Tuesday afternoons. And that's the biggest stumbling block I think anybody would have to set this up again, you know, in another club. But I would love to see it rolled out. I think it's hugely rewarding for everybody involved, for the club, you know, to see us facilitating this, you know, the kids and the families in particular. And I think the volunteers get a lot out of it as well, you know. But the FAI would be well, you know, they've come down three or four occasions to look at the quiet room, to look at the autism friendly match day experience, and we would have sent them footage for the competition entry of Football Friends as well, so they would be very aware of what we're doing.
Yeah, let's circle back then to the More Than Football Award. That I believe there's a delegation going over in November, isn't it, to Belgium. Are you presenting to get delegates there to kind of put your case forward as to why you should be picked, or is it a case that this would be something that would be rolled out in more European countries?
No, so this is what the More Than Football Award, I suppose, focuses on, is off the pitch, as I said to you. And that can be anything from, you know, mental health, physical activity. I think some clubs are involved in very good stuff with climate change and all that. Our focus is on, I suppose, this, you know, it covers a few initiatives in my view. It's obviously physical activity, but there's also a mental health aspect of it. There's a social aspect of it. Sporting. So we're in, the title for our one is Waterford FC, the Autism Friendly Club. So that's where our, and we are up against the three other clubs, Aberdeen, Salford City and Bristol Rovers. Each of us will present a 15 minute presentation, and then the board members of the EFDN will pick the winner after that presentation. And part of the, we were in the long list, but part, the prize for it is the installation of a mini football pitch. And we had to get, you know, we had to go to the council. I thought if we could put that in the RSC, you know, as part of the prize, that we could have a whole hub there, because we also do a lot of we have a community boot room now in the RSC installed there. And rather than then using, you know, relying on the Junior League for Osier Park or the Community Butler Centre for their facility, we could have it all in the RSC. And the council were very good and very open and granted us that permission. So that's where that'll be installed if we win it, you know.
Well, it seems like obviously a fantastic project. And I mean, we wish you best to luck as well coming up to the award itself. Thank you so much for joining me, Colin.
No, thanks. Pleasure, Adrian. Thank you.
Sports Beat Extra.
So obviously, Cliona and Rachel, thank you so much for joining me. Describe to me, first of all, how you found out that you had gotten the awards and what that means to both of you after such a long and, I suppose, as you would describe, a successful season for Carlow, really, isn't it?
Yeah, so we got an email on, I think it was Monday, was it? So I just got an email from the LGFA and, yeah, I was delighted, like, obviously shocked. Like, there's so many great players in junior, and like even on the Carlow team, I think there are probably like 15 players that would have been well deserving of such an award. So yeah, hugely honoured. And I suppose, yeah, with the disappointment at the end of the year, it definitely does put a more positive spin on the year personally, but it definitely doesn't make up for the disappointment of the All-Ireland semi-final loss. You know, I think that's something that's going to take a lot of us a long time to get over. So yeah, definitely puts a nice positive spin on it. And it's a testament to the work of everyone, like, especially, I know, like, Rachel will agree with the sentiment as a forward, to get on like accolades like that. There's absolutely no way that would happen without the hard work of everybody else on the team. So it's just goes to show where Carlow football is, that we're even being considered for awards like this.
Yeah. Is that the same for you as well, Rachel?
Yeah, the exact same. Couldn't have put it any better, Cleena.
But you're selling yourselves a little bit short, really, aren't you? Because, you know, winning Division 4, making it to the Leinster final, the semi-finals of the All-Ireland Junior Championship, it's nothing to scoff at, really, and it is sort of a testament to the talent in the Carlow LGFA team and all that as well. And you obviously rightfully mentioned the rest of the squad as well, because your two, both of you being included on this team is obviously a massive honour for yourselves personally, but also it's a reflection on the overall team in Carlow, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We're so blessed that we have... we had the coaches there for the last couple of years. Ed Burke was the main manager and his background team, and that kind of drove on the whole senior ladies Carlow setup for the last number of years, which built on previous years of Carlow being thereabouts in the junior championship. So it's definitely not easy to make it to a junior semi-final, and every year the championship is getting more and more difficult as they're trying to like increase the numbers in the junior championship. So they've been relegating two teams from intermediate for the last 2 years and only putting up one for junior. So the numbers in the junior championship are growing, and even the standard difference has increased so much, say from my first All-Ireland semi-final, I think, Cleena, probably yourself, is 2017, and the difference between 2017 and last year is just crazy, the difference in tactics and pace and everything. So yeah, it's definitely growing, and it's not easy to get there, so it was a good year to get there.
And alongside that as well, I mean, it shows that there's a mark there for next season now, having got to the semi-final stages. The real push now is to get past that and into the final, isn't it?
Definitely, like as Rachel said, we had our first All-Ireland semi-final in 2017, and to be honest, it's only gotten harder to get there since then. Do you know, every year it's such a huge achievement to get there, but like ultimately everybody in Carlow just wants to get over the line and to get a shot at Croke Park. But like, yeah, as Rachel said, the standard is just increasing every single year. And, you know, if we compared ourselves to a few years ago, we've come on leaps and bounds. And yeah, it's just frustrating kind of not to get over that All-Ireland semi-final hurdle. But yeah, it was a hugely successful year, and especially in terms of the league, you know, we're really proud of what we achieved, and it just goes to show that we have the talent in Carlow to put it up with the best.
Yeah, and obviously the awards night hasn't been held yet, but I'm sure you're all both eager to get stuck into next season. I know, Cleena, obviously you were crowned county champion with your club, and then are you kind of already looking forward to the next sort of inter-county season?
Yeah, I suppose, like, it would be nice to get a bit of a break, I'm not going to lie. You know, it was a long season last year. I don't know, the management said it, but we played a huge amount of competitive matches last year with Carlow, and I enjoyed every single one of them, but then you're straight back into club championship, and I think a bit of downtime or a little bit of a break would be nice. And that's easy to say now. I know, as soon as, you know, we don't have a management team at the minute, so I know when that's... kind of finalised, we will be raring to go, but definitely is a long year, so it'll be nice to get a bit of a break.
Yeah, and is that the same for you as well, Rachel?
Yeah, exactly. We started training with Carlow at the start of November last year, so yeah, like Lena was saying, I don't have the numbers, but we played a huge amount of matches and training 3 times a week since November. Like, it all adds up on your body and on your mind as well. So I've finish football now for the year, but we're straight into Camogie Championship with club after finishing club football championship. So yeah, in one sense, of course, you want to be winning with your club and continuing on playing, but it would be nice to have a break too.
Yeah, no, it never stops really between Camogie and Gaelic football, doesn't it? Is there a sense that, you know, to get to those high stages, and we talk about surpassing the semi-final stage of the All-Ireland, getting to the final, that you need to be playing as much as possible? Or do you think there's an element to the coaching level that you need to kind of say, okay, we're going to step back for a week, give everyone a rest, and then come back even stronger?
Yeah, it varies week on week. And our management team were very good at looking after that workload the past year. And there would never be an issue, like, if you decided, like, I personally need a break for a couple of days or a session or two, that's no problem. You know, they're looking out for you, and they want the best for you, and they want the best for the team. So mid-season, you can always take a break, like, if you need a little short one.
And then I'll ask one final question. Looking back on the inter-county campaign and obviously getting to that semi-final stage and, you know, obviously winning Division 4, getting to the Leinster final, now that you're kind of being rewarded for all the hard work that you put in with these two awards in the team of the championship, is there a moment you look back at on the campaign as sort of the highlight for you?
Well, personally, definitely winning Division 4 was probably my fondest memory with Carlo. You know, just the support that you felt from everybody in Carlo, and everybody going to the match and seeing how happy it made, like, our family and friends. Like, in fairness, we have such good support. And even the day that we beat Fermanagh in the semi-final of the league, just seeing what it meant to all our friends and family and the supporters of Carlo Ladies Football, and even there were some young girls there as well. And I think just those memories definitely stay with me forever. And, you know, you have to appreciate, even at the end, when you get knocked out of the championship, that those days happened, and that it was a huge achievement and was one of the best days of my life.
Yeah. And Rachel, Division 4 winning, the same for you, is it?
Yeah, I think so. That was a major highlight for sure. And yeah, like Fiona touched on, we had a huge support at all our matches, and even in the championship, we had a lot of away matches. We were up in Sligo, we were up in Derry, we were in Dublin for a match, and then the semi-final was in Parnell Park, like, in Dublin again. And at all those matches, like, it felt like home matches. Like, there was so much support there. So that was great to have everyone driving you on. So that was so nice and to have. And I suppose, like, just during the year, we had such good training sessions and such a good bond of training that even after losing the semi-final, it's nice to just look back on that and be like, you know, trainings were hard, but they were so enjoyable, and I wouldn't change any of them. So that's nice too.
Well, Clean and Rachel, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, and congratulations again on your awards. Hopefully we'll be back next year after you've won the All-Ireland and we can talk about even more.
This is Sportsbeat Extra.
Before we finish up, let's take a look at some of the fixtures you've got to look forward to tomorrow. In soccer, there's two Premier League games to be looking forward to. After salvaging a draw against Southampton last weekend, Ipswich Town will welcome Aston Villa to Portman Road for a 2 p.m. kickoff. However, the Premier League game of the day will always be, and has always been, the Spurs going to Old Trafford to face Manchester United, and that kicks off at 4:30. In the Women's Super League, Manchester City will host Brighton from 12:30. At 2, Everton host Manchester United. Just an hour later, you've got two fixtures to look forward to. Katie McCabe's Arsenal travel to Leicester City, and West Ham host Liverpool. To round off the day of fixtures in the WSL, Aston Villa will play Spurs. Following the semi-final results today in the snooker, we're all set for a treat as the British Open comes to a close tomorrow, with the final set to get underway at 10 p.m.
Sportsbeat Extra. Beat.
That's all for this week's Sportsbeat Extra. You can listen back on our website, beat102103.com/podcasts. Coming up next, the soundtrack to your Saturday night, Beat Anthems.